you live from our Elliott Avenue studios. Welcome to the Mahler & Millen Mock Draft, presented by San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side.
Let's get it started.
Now with Hugh Millen, here's Dave Softy Mahler.
All righty, here we go. It's an annual tradition right here on the radio station, the annual Mahler & Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by our friends at San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side. Their tap room on First Avenue South is going to open tomorrow at 3 o'clock. The lemonades are going to be available in cans in June, but you can get them first at the tap room tomorrow at the San Juan Seltzer Tap Room, 3901 First Avenue South in Seattle. Apparently, Hugh Millen has already had too many Dick San Juan Seltzers because we are venturing to get him all connected, all hooked up. Get him on the air so we can start the draft. 3:20, the Jaguars will be on the clock. We'll get Hugh's take on everything happening with the draft today. We got a bunch of picks to be made, got a bunch of GMs from the audience. Everybody, by the way, participating in the mock draft is going to get a free Papa John's pizza and a twosome of golf at Lakeland Village Golf nice. Course, even if your pick sucks. And who decides if your pick sucks? Hugh Millen decides if your pick sucks. Coming up about 6:30 or so tonight. But, dude, before the draft gets going, we got to respond to what we heard from Pete Carroll and John Schneider, right? First time that John Schneider, Dick, has spoken since last pre-draft press conference, which was a year ago. First time for Pete Carroll since they lost to the Rams in the postseason. I got thoughts. I know Hugh's got some thoughts when he pops on the air. What was your biggest takeaway from Pete Carroll and John Schneider's almost hour-long press conference today?
My biggest takeaway was it indeed was two issues. It was the issue of the Seahawks being upset with what Russell Wilson had to say. I came away from that press conference absolutely 100% confident that the Seahawks were pissed at Russell Wilson with what he had to say. However, the second part of the issue was whether there was serious trade talks, and I came out of that believing what they told us. And because I never really thought there was ever reason to believe that there were serious trade talks. And John Schneider's quote, "I never actively negotiated with anybody." John, now you can choose to believe him or not.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose to believe John Schneider when he says that, just as I'm going to choose to believe Pete Carroll when he said that it was a media problem. It wasn't a problem with us because we knew the truth. Now, that's the schism. Was not a problem. The fact that they were pissed off with Russell Wilson, that to me was made perfectly clear Pete Carroll today.
Well, I think any talk of even blaming the media at all is horse crap, but that's just me. I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I think that's Pete Carroll trying to protect the football team and deflect blame to the press, which in a lot of ways he should be doing. I mean, he did today exactly what he's accusing Russell Wilson of not doing, which is protecting the football team. Pete Carroll was the guy that came out and said it was a challenge, right? When Pete Carroll says that what Russell Wilson said became a challenge when it came to subscribing to the number one rule, which is protect the football team, that's as close as you'll ever see Pete Carroll get to criticizing anybody.
Yeah.
Even Russell Wilson, when he called him out like that today. So I just find any criticism of the media, any criticism of the press from Pete Carroll's part to be doing exactly what he is supposed to do, which is protect the football team, throw somebody else under the bus, gain some traction in his own locker room, and get his players to believe that everybody over there is on the same page, even if it makes him look ridiculous, which I thought at times today he looked ridiculous. I thought a lot of it was nonsensical with the media. I mean, you're telling me that the media blew this thing up, yet on the other hand, you're also saying that what Russell Wilson said was a gigantic challenge when it came to protecting the football team. So you can't really have it both ways. And I agree with you, and I have agreed with you. You and I have been on the same page in regards to Russell Wilson's immediate future. Mm-hmm. But I've told you before that I thought the bigger story was his long-term future. Look, you can argue he was never going anywhere for 2021 because of the dead money. Because of the cap money that would be a factor for Russell Wilson if he was moved. But the idea that Russell Wilson now may not be here long term, the idea that he may not be here past 2022, and the idea that there was a fracture at some point between the Seahawks and Russell Wilson, I think that is the story. And it was obvious it was obvious from Pete Carroll's tone, from Pete Carroll's perspective, that, you know, things had to be worked out behind the scenes. We've spent more time talking now off the field than we ever had. What he did became a challenge for the football team. It was obvious, as you said, that there was some animosity. Yeah. Maybe not even animosity, but some frustration between Pete Carroll and John Schneider, and anger between those two and Russell Wilson's camp. So I just think even making the media factor today, I mean, first of all, it's predictable, right? I mean, I'm not surprised by it whatsoever. We've been saying this for months, that when these guys finally talk, they're going to present a unified front. Mm-hmm. Number one, they'll deflect blame. They'll act like everything is hunky-dory kumbaya. And that's exactly what Pete Carroll did today. So I'm not surprised by it. Now we can all move on and play some damn football.
But again, the media members that knew the Seahawks organization the best, which were the media members that were in the quote-unquote Zoom room today, were not the ones that were pushing this narrative of Russell Wilson being traded this year. And I think most, if not all, of the media members in Seattle knew that that was just not going to happen. Now, the future, like you mentioned, the future of Russell Wilson, I think, is going to be decided much more in large part with what he looks like in 2021 versus any potential fracture that occurred over the last 4 or 5 months. If Russell Wilson looks like he is already peaked and on the way down in his career, and they feel like they can get value for Russell Wilson 12 months from now, I think they're probably going to try to get value for Russell Wilson 12 months from now.
And that's the story. That's exactly the story.
Right, but I don't know if it's because of what we saw in the last 4 months.
Oh, I think it's a huge part of it. It's absolutely a huge part of it. I mean, nobody 5 months ago was talking about Russell Wilson not being here when he was 40 years old. Nobody. I mean, we all thought there was a chance he could play somewhere else, like Joe Montana or Brett Favre or Peyton Manning, but nobody thought that he would not re-sign once his current deal is over. And the fact that you're sitting here telling me that you think there's a possibility, and I agree with you, that that could happen, to me is a development from where we were sitting in November.
That's true.
When this guy was being talked about as the MVP of the NFL. So I just find there's just no desire from my perspective or even reason or even angle to even introduce the media. This is not the media's fault. This is not the media's problem. What's happening at the VMAC and what will happen at the VMAC is between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. The media was not the one that planted four teams that Russell Wilson wants to play for. The media was not the entity that threw an offensive line under the bus from a quarterback's perspective after he played like crap the entire second half of 2020. So this has got nothing to do with you, me, Greg Bell, Michael Sean Dugard, Joe Fan, or any national member of the media whatsoever. And by the way, if Pete Carroll thought that was such a problem, the speculation from the media, if he honestly thought that that was a problem, he could have squashed this months ago. But John Schneider and Pete Carroll decided to do nothing about it, continue with the narrative, and continue on. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because there was a problem behind closed doors, and they needed time to fix it. As you just said, the anger, the frustration is apparent, and they needed time to work through that. That's why nothing was said. They did the right thing. They worked through it. Now, hopefully today, they're on the same page and we can all move on and start talking about getting back to a Super Bowl, at least in 2021.
What still confuses me a little bit is the timing, because Pete said he was in constant communication with Russell Wilson. John Schneider was in constant communication with Mark Rogers. How many days after the Dan Patrick interview did Mark Rogers throw out that list of four teams? Do you remember? About...
I don't.
Is it like a couple of weeks-ish?
Yeah, potentially.
I mean, I have to go back and look. My question would be, and what I emerged still confused about is, all right, if you're in constant conversation with Russell Wilson, and you clearly tell him you're pissed right after he says that with Dan Patrick, then why does the agent come out a week, 10 days, or whatever later? Yeah. I mean, you didn't get everything ironed out in those 10 days to prevent the story from continuing?
Apparently not. I mean, there could have been dialogue going on that they didn't like. from their perspective. And so they decided to take it to a new level, right? I mean, I think, look, I'll be the first to admit, and you got to agree with this, that for us to act like we know everything happening behind closed doors is extremely naive, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody has any idea how far these things went. And what was the word that Schneider used to talk about the trade talks, lack of trade talks for Russell Wilson?
He never actively negotiated with anybody.
Right, so define actively, right? I mean, all of us can look at that word differently. Right. I mean, look, I mean, what we think is an active trade talk with the Bears and John Schneider may be nothing of the sort to John Schneider. Maybe from their perspective, when lawyers get involved and start putting pen to paper and actually putting this stuff down and have a agreement drafted between two teams, then that's active. I have no idea. I got no clue what John Schneider. And honestly, but Dick, here's the thing. It doesn't matter what you and I think. What matters is what they think. Okay? Right. So nobody knows how far this thing went. All we know is this today. Russell Wilson is not going anywhere for 2021 unless something crazy happens between now and September. And this is going to be a story that until Russell Wilson re-signs an extension in Seattle will be a topic that will be in the back of people's minds until the guy signs a new contract. And I would also say this. We have not even heard from Russell Wilson yet, right? I mean, Pete Carroll basically called out Russell Wilson today for violating rule number one of the football team. You heard that. Everybody heard that. What's Russell Wilson's take on that? Does Russell Wilson think he violated rule number one? Does Russell Wilson think there's got to be some fence mending that has to be done? And I would expect that by the time Russell Wilson addresses the media, he'll know exactly what to say because the guy's had 3 months to think about it.
And I don't think Russell Wilson's going to address the media at all until he has to.
Right, agreed.
Right now, he should feel like a puppy dog with his tail between his legs because he got kicked in the butt a little bit today publicly.
Well, and that's why I just think that, again, you know, that story on its own is enough to react to from a local perspective. And that's the reaction. Whether the reaction is he going anywhere in 2021, or is the reaction, hey, is there animosity? Is there a problem between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll? There's a story somewhere there to be had. We all agree on that. There is some kind of angle on that story, whether Russell Wilson getting kicked in the butt the way you said, whether there being anger and frustration between Pete and John and Russell and Mark Rogers, whether Russell wants to be here, whether he's leaving now, whether he's leaving in 3 years. I just think to throw that out there for anybody to act like there was simply nothing to react to. That's nonsense. Nonsense. It's complete horse crap. Of course there was stuff to react to. Tons of stuff. Now, we can talk about details of that reaction, like you have done many times. But, hey, one angle is if he goes somewhere, to think that he's going now is ridiculous, and I agree with that. But there's a lot of other angles involving this story. There are tentacles all over the place with this story. So, look, I'm glad to have it out there. I think Pete Carroll, though, has been a master of deflection ever since he's been here, whether falling on the sword or supporting a guy until he doesn't need to anymore, deflecting blame, shifting the focus. He did all that stuff today. So I think, again, as ridiculous as it sounded at times for Pete Carroll to put this on the media, to not put it all on his quarterback and to not put it all on the franchise and to introduce maybe another villain in this story, which would be the press, I think, as crazy as it sounds, it was probably a smart move by him today.
I think it was, too.
To toss that out there. All right, here's the deal. We're going to attempt to get our buddy Humone on the air so we can get the mock draft going. Courtesy of San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side, baby, next on 950 KJR.
With the first pick.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios. Welcome to the Mahler & Millen Mock Draft. Presented by San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side.
Let's get it started.
Now with Hugh Millen, here's Dave Softy Mahler.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the 23rd annual Mahler Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by our friends at San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side. New flavors launching tomorrow at the Tap Room on First Avenue, including Wild Strawberry Lemonade, baby, down there at their seltzery.
Yeah, baby!
Those won't be in cans until June, but you can grab them tomorrow at the San Juan Seltzery Tap Room on First Avenue. The draft is underway, but like we do every year, Hugh Millen joins us. And Hugh, before we start and get going with the Jaguars on the clock at number one, how about some general thoughts on this year's draft? We've been doing this for 23 years now. There's always transcendent players, always unique players in this draft, like Calvin Johnson a while back. Do you see any of that on the board today as we head to round one in a matter of minutes?
Yeah, I think there's two players worth noting in that regard. First of all, Penei Sewell, in terms of his athleticism, his ability to get to the second level, to hunt down defenders, defensive backs on screen plays. He has more agility than any tackle that I've seen in 23 years. I would not necessarily say that with respects to his pass technique. His pass technique is very, very good. It's outstanding, and it's worthy of any pick, but it's not elite in the sense of 23 years. And then the other guy would just be simply Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. He is, as advertised, at 6 foot six. The running ability, the jumping ability, the acceleration off the line, and upon film study, a much better blocker than one might expect. I think he is a transcendent talent at tight end, and probably the best in 23 years, along with Sewell and his ability in space.
I love it. Well, the 2021 Mahler-Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by San Juan Seltzer, is officially open. Just got the signal from the commissioner, Richard Fain, and league headquarters in Normandy Park. So let's get right to it and get the San Juan Seltzer. Find your wild side facts on the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1-15 last year. Got a new head coach in Urban Meyer, seventh time in 10 years they've picked in the top five, and ninth time they've picked in the top 10. Clear need a quarterback, but also had the second worst scoring and total defense last year in the National Football League. To get the 2021 Mahler-Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by San Juan Seltzer, underway, let's head out to Normandy Park and league headquarters and the San Juan Seltzer Find Your Wild Side podium. And Commissioner Fain with the Jaguars on the clock right now at number one.
With the first pick in the Mahler-Millen Mock Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence, quarterback, Clemson.
Trevor Lawrence, 6'5", 213 pounds. No surprise there. National champion as a freshman back in 2018. Threw for 90 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 66% completion percentage, and just became the number one overall pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars. No surprise there, but the Jaguars may have just found their messiah. Trevor Lawrence heads to Jacksonville. Your thoughts?
Well, you knew this was going to happen when you saw Zach Wilson's pro day. 31 teams showed up. The team that didn't was the Jacksonville Jaguars. So you knew that Trevor Lawrence was coming off. And look, it is really hard to find a weakness with this guy. I think you could argue that since John Elway, maybe only Andrew Luck has been a higher esteemed quarterback coming out of the college ranks into the NFL. 6'6", 220 under normal circumstances. Yeah, he fell to 213. He had shoulder issues with his left shoulder. This shouldn't be a problem. So he lost a little bit of weight. So he has the size. He has the stature. He has the velocity on the football, the spin of the football, the big time playmaking ability. He only lost two games in high school, and he only lost two games in college. He throws the best back shoulder fade I've seen. I always thought Eli Manning was the maestro at that. This guy, as a college freshman, was throwing the back shoulder fade. Incredible a touch and ability to the outside. Can throw over the middle, anticipatory, slides well in the pocket, toughness. I mean, if there's a weakness, you might say that at 213, you're worried about his frame. Not really. He's got great speed. He's outrun big time linebackers in big time games. That's an underrated part of his game. Yeah. Just one thought on his ability. There's a common concept called hammer, where an inside slot receiver runs a little hitch at about 5 or 6 yards. The outside receiver runs in the NFL a in route at about 12 to 15 yards. I was watching the semifinal game in Lawrence's second year against Notre Dame, and I said, wait a minute, they just ran hammer, but they just ran the outside guy at 18 yards. Sure enough, backed up, count the yards, and he just ripped it right in front of the safety's face at an 18-yard depth. I don't know if you understand what that means, but to take a progression and take what's normally 12 to 15 yards for NFL quarterbacks and have a college quarterback doing it at 18 yards is just a testament to his ability to rip the football. He's really got very few weaknesses.
I love it. Trevor Lawrence and GM David Niddle getting the pick in there. He has become the number one pick in the Mahler-Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by our friends over at San Juan Seltzer. That puts the New York Jets on the clock at number two. Let's get the San Juan Swan Seltzer. Find your wild side facts on the Jets 2-14 last year. Got a new head coach and Niners defensive coordinator Robert Saleh. Their point differential, guys, of minus 214 was the worst in the NFL last year. And the Jets had the worst scoring offense in all of football at 15 points a game. Sam Darnold is now in Carolina. And the two quarterbacks on the roster include guys like James Morgan and Mike White. They were bad on both sides last year. 32nd in points scored, as we said. 26th in points allowed. And have not made the playoffs since 2010, which, by the way, was Pete Carroll's first year in Seattle. Let's get to it. The Jets and GM Marcus Boyd on the clock at number two. Let's get to the San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side podium. And find out what the Jets will do here at number two in the Mahler Millen Mock Draft. Here's Commissioner Fain.
With the second pick in the Mahler Millen Mock Draft, the New York Jets select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
Zach Wilson, 6'2", 214-pound junior from Draper, Utah. He became the youngest quarterback to start in school history at BYU at 19 years and 2 months of age. Huey threw for just over 7,600 yards, 56 touchdowns, and 15 picks at BYU. He is now the new quarterback of the Jets in New York. Your thoughts?
In my opinion, the most intriguing story of this draft is what does San Francisco do after having moved up to number three. The most intriguing player in the draft is Zach Wilson because the high side is so immense, but you can see a downside. The high side is real simple. He looks like they call him the Mormon Mahomes. He has Mahomes-like traits. He has Aaron Rodgers-like traits. He has incredible ability, arm talent, the ability to throw with velocity, running to his left, off platform, just remarkable ability. And the NFL has really valued that over the last few years, seeing what they can do. So he has an arm that is, a rare breed. Now, we thought he was at 6'3", measures it in at closer to 6'2". Yep. He's only about 212, so you may be worried about his frame, but this is a brass guy. Utah. He grew up in high school in Utah, played his college football in Utah. Now he goes to the Big Apple. He's got some Joe Namath in him, a brass guy. And you know what? From an arm talent standpoint, reminiscent of Namath as well. If there are concerns, it's that he really was just a one-hit wonder last year. Yep. in 2020 after being pretty pedestrian in 2019 and a little bit of playing time in 2018. But 2020 was a big-time year. Showed everything you want to see from an arm talent standpoint. And you just wonder whether or not their light schedule, BYU's light schedule, how that's going to translate in the NFL. But in terms of having a guy with the most coveted aspect in pro football, which is that golden arm, he brings it to New York.
Trevor Lawrence goes number one to Jacksonville in the Mahler Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by San Juan Seltzer. Zach Wilson goes number two to the Jets. That puts the Niners now.
Can you feel it now?
On the clock at number three, the San Juan Seltzer. Find your wild side facts on the Niners. 6-10. They gave up number 12 and number 102 in the third round this year, plus a first next year and a first in 23 for this pick right here from the Dolphins. Jimmy Garoppolo, passer rating of 98.1 in 4 years in San Francisco. He's been hurt and has only started 30 games out of a possible 64 with the Niners. And by the way, how about this, guys? The Niners' last Pro Bowl quarterback was Jeff Garcia all the way back in 2002. To find out what the Niners do now at number three, let's head to the San Juan Seltzer. Find your wild side podium. And the Niners at number three. Here's Commissioner Fain.
With the third pick in the Mahler Millen Mock Draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Justin Fields, quarterback, Ohio State.
GM Mike Miller, shocking the world. Reports were the Niners would take Matt Jones, but no, Mike Miller goes with Justin Fields, 6'2", 227-pound junior out of Kennesaw, Georgia. Began his career at Georgia, was a freshman All-SEC selection, transfers to Ohio State, and then 2 years later is playing in the national championship game. 5,700 yards, 67 touchdowns to just 9 picks, Huey, in 3 years in college football. Justin Fields is now a member of the San Francisco 49er quarterback core. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the thought had been that perhaps the 49ers would go Mac Jones way because why is Garoppolo being jettisoned? Because he cannot execute the detail of their offense. You remember that RG3 played for Kyle Shanahan's dad Mike Shanahan, and that was a kind of a one-hit wonder and altogether a disappointment. So you thought maybe you'd go safe with Mac Jones, but here's what you get in Justin Fields. First of all, he's just the physical skill set. He's built like a running back. He at 4.4 40 yard dash. There's a little bit of a Donovan McNabb in his game, but he's faster than a McNabb, probably has a stronger arm than a McNabb. And if there's a thought about his accuracy, he was 56% on his passes on passes that traveled more than 10 yards from the line of scrimmage. That was second only to Joe Burrow and Mac Jones over the last 2 years in the Power Five. So this guy does throw with accuracy. Now, if there's a knock on him, it's processing over the middle. I think his better plays are to the outside of the numbers. He's not as anticipatory as Mac Jones over the middle of the field, and we see issues with him handling the blitz. A lot of times he appears unaware about the blitz. He held the ball at 3.08 seconds on blitzes, and that was the most in all of FBS in terms of just the measurables of how he's handling the blitz. So I think that the feeling is that a good coach will say, look, I see those mistakes on tape, but I can bring him in. He's got the physical goods. I will teach him so he doesn't make those mistakes with blitz, but I've got this mold of clay with the big arm and of course, the playmaking ability to extend plays.
Niners take Justin Fields, Ohio State, at number 3, and GM Mike Miller. We are now through 3. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Justin Fields go 1, 2, 3. Will it be 4 in a row? We'll find out right now. The San Juan Seltzer, find your wild side facts, baby, on the Atlanta Falcons, 4-12 last year. Anybody off the top of their head know the name of the new coach of the Falcons? His name is Arthur Smith, and he was the Titans' offensive coordinator the last 2 years. Atlanta, by the way, that blown lead in the Super Bowl, that was 5 years ago. Haven't made the playoffs since 2017. Matt Ryan's 35, by the way, has 3 years left on his contract. And the Falcons, by the way, since that Super Bowl year, have gone from first in scoring offense to 16th last year and have not finished over 500 in 4 years since 2017. Let's find out what the Falcons and general manager Steve Gardipi do here at number 4 to the San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side podium. We go! And the Falcons on the clock at number 4. Here's Commissioner Fain.
With the 4th pick in the Mahler-Millen mock draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Trey Lance, quarterback, North Dakota State.
Trey Lance, the heir apparent now in Atlanta to Matty Ryan. Trey Lance only started 17 games, in college at South Dakota State. 30 touchdowns to 1 interception. Wasn't even playing quarterback until he got to high school, by the way. 6'3", 224, redshirt sophomore out of South Dakota State, just became the heir apparent to Matt Ryan in Atlanta. How about that?
Well, I think it's good for him to have the opportunity to sit. I think the only thing for the Falcons might have been to take a Kyle Pitts, but this must mean that they believe in the long-term future of Trey Lance, because from a contractual standpoint, the Falcons have just committed themselves to Matt Ryan for another couple of years. So a little bit perplexing in that regard. So you want to sit him for a couple of years. You know, Aaron Rodgers sat for a couple of years. So it can be done. In Lance, what you're getting is a faster version of Dante Culpepper, just a great physical tool set. He's got the big arm, as you mentioned, just the one interception. So there was high efficiency. When you kind of delve into it, North Dakota State, they run a pro style system. They don't ask a ton of their quarterbacks in some of their biggest games. He was only in the low 20s in terms of his pass attempts. He only had the one game here this most recent season in 2020. He was 15-30. So you don't see him like some of the other quarterbacks have to put the football team on his shoulders. But I tell you what, those shoulders are broad, and they house a cannon of an arm. He's got great feet. He's got stature. He can run over guys. So you would expect, you know, kind of whether it's a Dante Culpepper, Mon's Eye, Cam Newton, big dude, big arm. But the last remaining concern is accuracy in the on passes that were over the line of scrimmage. His accuracy rate was 44%. Mm. That was almost 8% worse than any of the other top quarterbacks.
Wow.
And since 2017, it's the worst. So there's some accuracy issues with that big cannon. This is a boomer bust, as it's often said. Big risk for the Falcons.
I love it. Well, the Mahler Millen mock draft brought to you by San Juan Seltzer is underway. We are through pick number four. Trevor Lawrence goes one to Jacksonville. Zach Wilson, BYU quarterback, to the Jets at two. Justin Fields is now in the Niner quarterback room at number three out of Ohio State. And Trey Lance right there is now to the Falcons at number four. Big thanks, by the way, to Papa John's Pizza, independently owned in the Puget Sound for over 20 years, employing more than 1,000 local team members in the Puget Sound area. And of course, big thanks to San Juan Seltzer. Find your island aside. Their tap room on First Avenue opens tomorrow, by the way, at 3 o'clock, where you can try the new lemonade flavors that won't be available in cans until June. You can grab them tomorrow, baby, on draft at San Juan Seltzer on First Avenue. We're gonna break. The Bengals, the Dolphins, the Lions are on the clock, and the Mahler Millen mock draft brought to you by San Juan Seltzer next, right here on 950 KJR.
Details.
Now back to the Mahler and Millen Mock Draft, presented by San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side on your home for the 2021 NFL Draft. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Hey, big thanks to San Juan Seltzer. Their tap room opens tomorrow, baby. 3 o'clock, 3 to 9 tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, noon to 9, Sunday, noon to 7. The Wild Strawberry, the Blackberry Lemonades are available tomorrow at the tap room. Not until the 1st of June in cans, though, so get on down there and try the new flavors at San Juan Seltzer, 3901 First Avenue South. They will open for the first time in a long time at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And big thanks to Papa John's. They employ more than 1,000 local team members in the Puget Sound area. Every general manager in the Mahler Millen Mock Draft, brought to you by San Juan Seltzer, gets a free Papa John's pie and a twosome of golf at Lakeland Village Golf Course out there in beautiful Allen, Washington. The league again, going by tradition. They will award prizes coming up tonight at 6:20 right here on 950 KJR. We are through pick number four. The Jaguars kicked it off with Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson. New York went with Zach Wilson, quarterback BYU. Niners selected Justin Fields, quarterback Ohio State. And the Falcons went with Trey Lance, quarterback at North Dakota State, to be the replacement down the road for Matt Ryan. That brings us to the Bengals now on the clock at number five. The San Juan Seltzer. Find your wild side, baby. Facts on the Bengals. 4-11-1 last year. Zach Taylor in 2 years as the Bengal head coach. 6-25-1 overall. Not good. Joe Burrow, number one pick overall last year. 10 starts before tearing his ACL and his MCL. You realize the Bengals have not won a playoff game since 1990. And a fun fact, they've never, ever in their franchise history since 1968 won a playoff game on the road. They are 0-7 overall in road playoff games. The Bengals now on the clock, and GM Mike Tayross. Let's find out what they do to the San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side. Podium we go. And Commissioner Fain with the Bengals on the clock at number five.
With the fifth pick in the Mahler Millen mock draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Penei Sewell, offensive tackle, Oregon.
Penei Sewell becomes the first offensive lineman taken off the board. 6'4.5", 331-pound junior from American Samoa. Started 20 games at Oregon, all at left tackle, and sat out 2020 due to COVID to get ready for the NFL draft. He just became responsible, Hugh Millen, for Joe Burrow's blind side. He is now the left tackle of the Bengals at number five. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and you could have argued that you have Kyle Pitts there and maybe he was a better player and you get a target for Joe Burrow. I think there's some symbolism in that Burrow got hurt from the left side. Now, technically, it was from the left guard and a breakdown, but you got Anthony Munoz, greatest player in Bengals history, obviously, as a left tackle. I think that there's a certain psychology there for the Bengals and their fans to acquire a tackle just for the sake of protecting Joe Burrow. Now, in Penei Sewell, as I said at the top of our section there, in the 23 years that I've been watching tape and studying for the first round of the draft, Penei Sewell has better athleticism at the linebacker level, even hunting down nickel DBs and safeties on the screen game. He moves like a tight end. He's 325 pounds, and he has remarkable feet. He led the Power 5 by some metrics. He led the Power 5 in big-time blocks in terms of his ability. I mean, he can reach and he can get in great technique. He can scoop on the backside and get to the next level. He can cut guys off. He has incredible feet. Now, if there's a downside to him, he's 6'5", typically a left tackle. The prototypical might be pushing 6'6", even 6'7", to have those long arms. But at 6'5", he's able to play. And, you know, the guy that you really compare him to in that regard is Trent Williams for the Redskins, a contestant for the Hall of Fame, and he was a 6'5 left tackle. So he has adequate, if not ideal, height. But, again, that athleticism, I would say the only drawback, David, is occasionally he's such a good athlete that he will almost, I want to say, get lazy. His feet get a little too close. He gets a little tall. He doesn't grind on his technique because I think he feels like he can make up for any mistakes with his great feet and strength. But you'll see club guys, and you'll see him angry and nasty. You know, his head coach is a guy who loves the MMA. He brings an MMA mentality. I mean, this is one of the best tackles, you know, probably the equal of any tackle that we've seen in the last 20 years.
Well, Penei Sewell becomes the first offensive lineman, goes to the Bengals at number 5. Let's find out now what the Dolphins do at number 6. This is the pick, by the way, Miami got from the Eagles after they did the deal with San Francisco. Miami moving back up from number 12 to number 6. It cost them a fourth this year, plus a first rounder next year to move back up 6 spots and grab this selection. Let's find out. The San Juan Seltzer, find your wild side facts on the Miami Dolphins is 2 of the man, 64%, 1,800 yards, 11 touchdowns, 5 picks in 10 games last year for Tua Tagovailoa. The Dolphins have 2 first rounders. They'll be up again at number 18. Also have 4 picks in the top 50 overall. Let's find out what the Dolphins do right now at number 6 to the San Juan Seltzer. Find your island side podium we go. And Commissioner Fain with the Dolphins, 1 of 2 first-round draft picks, and GM Andy Lapik has the pick in. Here's the pick for the Dolphins now at number 6 with Commissioner Dick Fain.
With the 6th pick in the Mahler-Millen mock draft, the Miami Dolphins select Kyle Pitts, tight end, Florida.
Kyle Pitts, 6'5", 245-pound junior at a Philadelphia Archbishop Wood High School out there. Caught 100 balls in 3 years at Florida and 30 starts, 1,400 yards, 19 touchdowns, by the way. And if you're a Dolphin fan, you can dream of Mike Gesicki and Kyle Pitts playing together. Although this move does make some sense for the Dolphins, Hugh, because Mike Gesicki is going to be a free agent after the 2021 season comes to an end. This just felt like a pick that was just too good for the Dolphins to pass up. Your thoughts on Kyle Pitts goes to Miami at 6.
Well, in my lifetime, I think the most game-changing tight end that I've ever seen as a receiver is Kellen Winslow Sr. And this is the first guy that I've seen that makes me start to compare him to Kellen Winslow. You know, you had him at 6'5". I've got some reports at 6'6". Regardless, when he's up in the air to try and get the football, he's 7 foot. Unbelievable vertical ability and ability to catch a contested ball. Long arms, strong hands, great ball tracking ability, acceleration off the line, the athleticism. He looks like a wide receiver. Florida, they split him out. They had him in line. They played him everywhere. You literally look like – you feel like you're watching a wide receiver with his quickness. He has a great burst in acceleration, the ball skills, the run after the catch, runaway winner for the Mackey Award. I've got him at a 4.44 40-yard dash. So on every single measurable, he is in the top 98th, 99th percentile for tight ends. And then, what a surprise. You would have taken this if he never blocked anybody. And he's Kellen Winslow. Yep. You would have said he's worth the top 6 pick in the draft. But you know what? He's actually a nasty blocker. He has wide base, low hips, whether it's in perimeter or in line. He's a damn good blocker. Now, is he Gronkowski or Mark Bavaro or even Kittle? Maybe a shade below that. But this is a transcendent tight end. Yeah. Could have been worthy of the number one pick in other drafts.
Well, a great weapon for Tua Tagovailoa, no doubt. Kyle Pitts goes to the Dolphins at number 6. GM Andy Lapik got the pick in. That means the Lions, the Panthers, the Broncos now on the clock. The annual Mahler-Millen mock draft. We are through pick number 6. We'll recap it. Pick it up with the Lions at 7. Next, courtesy of San Juan Seltzer, Papa John's, Lakeland Village Golf Course, right here on 950 KJR.